They were more mobile than his troops, but they missed their quarry in the darkness. At the river, the retreating Persians were brought to an extremity of fear, for they found the bridge partially broken down and its northern end destroyed. At this point, a voice echoes down the centuries to us. We see a group of dismayed Persians standing about the great king upon the bank of the streaming river. We see the masses of halted troops, hungry and war-worn. A trail of battered transport stretches away towards the horizon, upon which at any time the advance guards of the pursuers may appear. There's not much noise, in spite of the multitude, but rather an inquiring silence. Standing out like a pier from the further side of the great stream are the remains of the bridge of boats, an enigma. We can't discern whether there are men over there or not. The shipping of the Ionian Greeks seems still to be drawn up on the further shore, but it's all very far away. Now there was with Darius an Egyptian, who had a voice louder than that of any other man on earth, and this man Darius ordered to take his stand upon the bank of the Ister, the Danube, and to call Histias of Miletus. This worthy, a day is to come, as we shall presently tell, when his decapitated head will be sent to Darius at Susa, appears approaching slowly across the waters in a boat. There's a parley, and we gather that it's all right. The explanation Histias has to make is a complicated one. Some Scythians have been and have gone again. Scouts, perhaps, these were. It would seem there had been a discussion between the Scythians and the Greeks. The Scythians wanted the bridge broken down. They would then, they said, undertake to finish up the Persian army and make an end of Darius and his empire, and the Ionian Greeks of Asia could then free their cities again. Miltiades, the Athenian, was for accepting this proposal, but Histias had been more subtle. He would prefer, he said, to see the Persians completely destroyed before definitely abandoning their cause. Would the Scythians go back and destroy the Persians to make sure of them, while the Greeks on their part destroyed the bridge? Anyhow, whichever side the Greeks took finally, it was clear to him that it would be wise to destroy the northern end of the bridge, because otherwise the Scythians might rush it. Indeed, even as they parleyed, the Greeks set to work to demolish the end that linked them to the Scythians as quickly as possible. In accordance with the suggestions of Histias, the Scythians rode off in search of the Persians, and so left the Greeks safe in either event. If Darius escaped, they could be on his side. If he were destroyed, there was nothing of which the Scythians could complain. Histias didn't put it quite in that fashion to Darius. He had at least kept the shipping and most of the bridge. He represented himself as the loyal friend of Persia, and Darius wasn't disposed to be too critical. The Ionian ships came over. With a sense of immense relief, the remnant of the wasted Persians were presently looking back at the steely flood of the Danube streaming wide between themselves and their pursuers. The pleasure and interest had gone out of the European expedition for Darius. He returned to Susa, leaving an army in Thrace under a trusted general, Megabazus. This Megabazus set himself to the subjugation of Thrace, and among other states, which submitted reluctantly to Darius, was a kingdom which thus comes into our history for the first time, the Kingdom of Macedonia, a country inhabited by a people so closely allied to the Greeks that one of its princes had already been allowed to compete and take a prize in the Olympian Games. Darius was disposed to reward Histias by allowing him to build a city for himself in Thrace, but Megabazus had a different opinion of the trustworthiness of Histias, and prevailed upon the king to take him to Susa, and under the title of counsellor to keep him a prisoner there. Histias was at first flattered by this court position, and then realized its true meaning. The Persian court bored him, and he grew homesick for Miletus. He set himself to make mischief, and was able to stir up a revolt against the Persians among the Ionian Greeks on the mainland. The twistings and turnings of the story, which included the burning of Sardis by the Ionians and the defeat of a Greek fleet at the Battle of Leidae, in 495 BC are too complicated to follow here. It's a dark and intricate story of treacheries, cruelties, and hate, in which the death of the wily Histiaeus shines almost cheerfully. The Persian governor of Sardis, through which town he was being taken on his way back to Susa as a prisoner, having much the same opinion of him as Mecabazus had, and knowing his ability to humbug Darius, killed him there and then, and sent on the head only to his master. Cyprus and the Greek islands were dragged into this contest that Histiaeus had stirred up, and at last Athens. Darius realized the error he had made in turning to the right and not to the left when he had crossed the Bosphorus, and he now set himself to the conquest of all Greece. He began with the islands. Tyre and Sidon were subject to Persia, and ships of the Phoenician and of the Ionian Greeks provided the Persians with a fleet by means of which one Greek island after another was subjugated. 8. The first attack upon Greece proper was made in 490 BC. It was a sea attack upon Athens, with a force long and carefully prepared for the task, the fleet being provided with specially built transports for the conveyance of horses. This expedition made a landing near Marathon in Attica. The Persians were guided into Marathon by a renegade Greek, Hippias, the son of Pisistratus, who had been tyrant of Athens. If Athens fell, then Hippias was to be its tyrant, under the protection of the Persians. Meanwhile, so urgent was the sense of a crisis in the affairs of Hellas that a man, a herald and runner, went from Athens to Sparta, forgetful of all feuds, to say, "Lacedaemonians, the Athenians make request of you to come to their help, and not to allow a city most anciently established among the Hellenes to fall into slavery by the means of barbarians. For even now Eretria has been enslaved, and Hellas has become the weaker by a city of renown." This man, Pheidippides, did the distance from Athens to Sparta, nearly 100 miles as the crow flies, and much more if we allow for the contours and the windings of the way, in something under 8 and 40 hours. But before the Spartans could arrive on the scene, the battle was joined. The Athenians charged the enemy. They fought in a memorable fashion, for they were the first of all the Hellenes about whom we know who went to attack the enemy at a run. And they were the first also who endured to face the Median garments and the men who wore them, whereas up to this time the very name of the Medes was to the Hellenes a terror to hear. The Persian wings gave before this impetuous attack, but the centre held. The Athenians, however, were cool as well as vigorous. They let the wings run and closed in on the flanks of the centre, whereupon the main body of the Persians fled to their ships. 7 vessels fell into the hands of the Athenians. The rest got away. And after a futile attempt to sail round to Athens and seize the city before the army returned thither, the fleet made a retreat to Asia. Let Herodotus close the story with a paragraph that still further enlightens us upon the tremendous prestige of the Medes at this time. "Of the Lacedaemonians there came to Athens 2,000 after the full moon, making great haste to be in time, so that they arrived in Attica on the 3rd day after leaving Sparta. And though they had come too late for the battle, yet they desired to behold the Medes, and accordingly they went on to Marathon, and looked at the bodies of the slain. Then afterwards they departed home, commending the Athenians and the work which they had done." 9. So Greece, unified for a while by fear, gained her first victory over Persia. The news came to Darius simultaneously with the news of a rebellion in Egypt, and he died while still undecided in which direction to turn. His son and successor, Xerxes, turned first to Egypt and set up a Persian satrap there. Then for 4 years he prepared a second attack upon Greece. Says Herodotus, who was, one must remember, a patriotic Greek, approaching now to the climax of his history,